Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill. A new podcast series from Newstalk.
Hello, I'm Luke O'Neill, and welcome to my podcast, Show Me the Science. And every week I pick a topic I hope that is of interest to you, that certainly I am absolutely fascinated by. And remember, I am an immunologist, that's my discipline, but I'm a scientist as well. I've been a scientist since the age of 18, effectively, and I look at everything through the lens of science. And what can science tell us about stuff that I just happen to be interested in? Now, this week I've got a great one for you. It's all about diets.
Summer's just about here, but don't panic. You could lose 10 pounds in a month.
Introducing DreamAway, the incredible new weight loss plan that helps burn away fat while you sleep.
Now, we're all aware of diets, are we not? Everybody has gone on a diet at some time in their lives, I predict. Although I haven't. Strange, I've never gone on a diet. But many, many people go on diets. They worry about their weight. They're tormented by food. And it's such a tragedy because food is a wonderful thing. How could we have become this kind of species? We're obsessed with what we eat and we worry about it and we want to lose weight or put on weight in certain situations. It's a really serious topic, actually, because one in four children at the moment in Ireland are overweight. And there's a projection that one in two will become overweight in the coming years. 66% of adults in Ireland are overweight or obese. It's incredible. It's a huge, huge epidemic. And since 1975, obesity in the world, in the developed world, of course, has gone up threefold. So what the hell is going on? Now, the reason why it's serious is if you're overweight, huge health issues, all kinds of things you'll be at risk of if you're overweight, especially if you're obese. And it's obvious things like heart disease, because your heart's under pressure, trying to pump the blood around your body, diabetes, which is all to do with glucose, and that's tied into diet as well. Cancer, very importantly, being overweight is a big risk factor for certain types of cancer. And of course, most recently, dare I mention it, COVID-19, obesity is a risk factor for that as well, and other infectious diseases too. So it's a very serious topic. And even more amazingly, it's a multi-billion dollar industry.
Not only did I lose 4 pounds in a week,
I lost five.
The Slim Fast Pledge. Give us a week, we'll take off the weight.
With the RDX Full Stomach Reducing Plan, you fill your stomach, yet fat just seems to melt away.
So start today. By the time the weather heats up, you could look really hot.
Which is just ridiculous in a way that people are spending a fortune on trying to control their weight in various ways. And really, a lot of it's not necessary. To lose weight, if you take a bit of exercise, eat a bit less, that can help. Although, as I'm going to mention to you now, it's a lot of genetics in this as well. It's not just about eating too much. So it's quite a complicated thing. But very, very important for our overall health is to try to keep your weight under control. Difficult, though, that is. We're driven to stuff the chocolates into our faces. I mean, it's like a biological thing in a way that we can't avoid gorging on food. We love food, don't we? And it's really hard then to control weight in different situations. But as I say, it's a really, really important topic. Now, how do you know if you're overweight or obese? That's obvious at one level. But remember, science likes to measure things, and science is actually all about data, as I've said lots of times. And you got to get data and say, look, what does this really mean from a data science point of view? We use the BMI, the body mass index. A guy called Ansel Keys devised this. It's one way to measure if you're overweight or not. Now, it's complicated. It's your weight in kilograms divided by your height in meters squared. Now, how they got to those numbers, I do not know. But that's how you get your BMI. And you get a number out of this, basically. And that number will tell you if you're a normal weight, if you're overweight or obese. So if your number is between 18 and 24, you're normal. You're in your right kind of weight range. If it's over 25, you're overweight. And then as the number goes up, you go into obesity. And if you're over 30, 35, you're classified as more and more obese. Over 40 is called morbidly obese. And that's really, really serious. So you can calculate this using those sorts of approaches. And it's important to get some measure on it, obviously, and a BMI then is one metric that's used. Now, height is very important. Obviously enough, the taller you are, you might get away with certain weight numbers, I guess. So that's where the height number is in there. It's not just your weight in kilograms, because that will vary in various ways. And then your height is really determining as well. The second thing they measure, which is almost as good, is your waist. And that can be almost as good a measure as anything else. And what that's about, actually, is a thing called visceral fat. There's different types of fat in your body. And visceral fat gets laid down in your midriff, around your belly, basically. And that's a bad type of fat. And if your waist is 40 inches for a man, or 35 for a woman, that means you're overweight. And that actually is a good correlate as well. And it's this visceral fat, as I'll explain, that seems to be doing all the mischief. So now we've defined it, what it is to be overweight and obese, we can now begin to study it, I guess. And as I say, science is all about studying numbers and getting those numbers as well. And again, if you're over 25 with your BMI, you can measure the risk of diabetes. It goes up. And as that number climbs, the risk of these things goes up and up. So doctors use it as a really important measure. Now, the big thing about this is, you know, why are we so obsessed with it? And why do we worry about it? We don't really know about the health risks. So when you're in your teens and 20s, you probably wouldn't be aware that being overweight is a risk for anything. It's all about body image. And that's a very malicious thing in many ways because, you know, people are obsessed with their image and we blame the media in part for this in various ways. Like, why would it be deemed to be thin is a good thing and to be slightly overweight is a bad thing, for instance? And certain societies have different opinions. We know that this changes through the ages. So back in the Greek times, the male figure and a slightly, wouldn't say obese male, but a slightly, what we say, overweight male was extremely attractive. So the focus was on the male body. And men in ancient Greece were really worried about this. They would worry about their shape and their body image would be really important. It begins to shift towards women then, who become more and more worried, obviously. And the Egyptians liked a slender shape, as they call it. We then get to the Renaissance. And it changes completely. The fuller figure is much more attractive. And the great painters of that time were painting these, you know, fuller figures, slightly overweight, was seen as extremely attractive. Now, why would it shift in that direction? We don't know, really. I mean, it's just sort of personal preference is part of the reason. We think the fuller figure would mean a woman is more fertile because she's got a bit of stored fat, I guess, and that might help her in various ways in terms of getting pregnant and then, you know, going through having the baby and so on. So a bit of weight is a good thing for fertility. So maybe that's why the slightly fuller figure became more attractive. Tragically, of course, in the 20th century, to be thin became the thing for women. And again, that created such torment and still does to this very day. Now, the numbers are startling. 91% of women are unhappy with their bodies. Now, that's outrageous because the bodies will differ between people. And yet the women are tormented. Like, there's so many are unhappy with how they look. And it just seems like crazy, doesn't it? And it does seem to be the media are pressing that image on women, I guess. Men, interestingly enough, it depends on when you measure, ask them. 10, 15 years ago, most men loved their bodies because men are so full of themselves anyway. All look good, you know. As time has gone by, men are getting more worried and men are now looking at their bodies more and more. And at the moment, the number is about 40% of men, when asked, are you happy with your body? 40% say, no, I'm not, especially young men. And that's another tragedy, isn't it? When previously it was a small number were unhappy, now a lot of men are unhappy with their bodies and they begin, you know, doing certain things and changing their diet and so on. So it's a very serious sort of mental health issue that we need to consider as well about people, how people view their bodies in various ways. And of course, the big thing that this is about then is what we call fat shaming. And that's a more serious part of this, where people feel ashamed and, you know, they're kind of picked on and bullied and, you know, you're eating too much and so on. Guess what? You shouldn't be doing fat shaming, because a big part of this is about genetics, like many things are. And there are different genetics and different people have different genes that predispose them to being overweight or obese. And more genes are being identified. Now, the number is staggering. And again, this is very recent research. So it's tremendous, the amount of effort that's gone into it. And of course, the reason is, as I say, the weight issue is an important one for health. 70 to 80% of obesity is down to your genetics. It's not about you eating too much food. So whatever those genetic differences are, they're promoting you to be overweight and obese. So it's kind of a medical issue, I guess, in many ways. And we must remind people of that. And fat shaming ignores that. And the famous story recently was James Corden on The Late Late Show in America. He was fat shamed by a guy called Bill Maher.
Being fat isn't a birth defect. Nobody comes out of the womb needing to buy two seats on the airplane. We have gone to this weird place where fat is good. It's pointing out that fat is unhealthy. That's what's bad. Fat shaming doesn't need to end. It needs to make a comeback.
Some amount of... And James Corden spoke out against this.
Thanks for that, Bill. So I'm sat at home and I'm watching this and all I could think, I was like, oh man, somebody needs to say something about this. If only there was someone with a platform who knew what it was actually like to be overweight. And then I realised, ah, that'll be me. We're not all as lucky as Bill Maher, you know? We don't all have a sense of superiority that burns 35,000 calories a day. Right? Right? But the truth is, you're working against your own cause. It's proven that fat shaming only does one thing. It makes people feel ashamed. And shame leads to depression, anxiety, and self-destructive behavior. Self-destructive behavior like overeating.
And as a result of that, a group of experts who work on obesity wrote a really important piece in one of the scientific journals saying, stop fat shaming, it's disgraceful. So we must keep this in mind. It doesn't help anybody, and certainly doesn't help people lose weight either. So these kind of my more serious elements must be in our minds as well when we talk about this topic. Now, if it's genetic, let's look at some of the genes, because of course we'd love to understand those in more and more detail. And an Irish scientist called Stephen O'Rahilly gets the credit for really being the first to find a genetic link to obesity. And the gene is called leptin. And he found a family, or a family came to him, he's a medic in Cambridge, who were overweight and obese. And he discovered they had a mutation in the leptin gene. Now, what does leptin do? After a meal, your body makes leptin and it stops you eating. These people had defective leptin, so they ate too much. And it was as simple as that. And if he gave them leptin, they lost weight. Now, there you have a great piece of science. It's not about you saying, oh, I fancy another cheeseburger, is it? It's the leptin levels in your body. And if it's defective, you eat probably too many cheeseburgers. In other words, it's not about your will or your power. It was down to a hormone called leptin. And that was different in these people. Now, from that moment on, more and more genes are found. And Stephen gets huge credit because he was the first to sort of say, look, there's a very clear genetic link here. Many, many genes, at least 50 genes, variants in them, will predispose you to obesity. And they've got very difficult names, PCSK1, PPAR gamma. All of these have been shown, when they're different, to link into obesity. So again, the genetic basis for this is really, really important. Now, let's now explore how the hell do we control our weight? Because if it's genetic, of course, it's one thing, and you know, you might want to block those pathways. I'll come back to that later. But are there ways for us to control our weight? Now, we all need to do this. We all need to try to maintain a reasonable weight for our health. And at its most extreme, bariatric surgery. That's actually surgery that cut away some of your stomach. And in fact, you've got to have a BMI of more than 40 to justify that, because it's quite traumatic. It works very well, though, in people who are severely obese. But of course, our second option is, guess what? The dreaded diets. Now, as I said, many of us have tried this and we've gone on diets and then gone off the diet and gone back on the diet again. And then you lose a bit of weight and you put weight back on. And it is a torment. I mean, I really believe this, because people are watching what they eat and they can't enjoy their food in various ways. And the history of dieting goes back actually to a good while, to the 1700s. A guy called George Chain, he was a UK doctor. He devises the very first diet. It was just milk and vegetables, pretty miserable. Eat those only and you begin to lose weight. And then a guy called Banting comes along, and he was famous. He does the Banting diet, 4 meals a day, pretty balanced. I mean, these things can be obvious, you know. I like the Banting one. He said a glass of dry wine a day as well. Isn't that nice? For some reason, dry wine helps, I suppose. But certainly he was saying, control your meals. Portion size begins to come into it, you know. And then the whole dieting industry begins to take off. Now, here's my next statistic. Get ready for this. 45 million Americans are at the moment on a diet. So there's a huge number of people trying to diet. The overall value of the dieting industry is $33 billion a year. Companies make on selling supplements or guides. So it's a huge thing, really, which is staggering. 800 million people in the world are starving. That just gives you an idea how stupid this is, because so many people are trying to lose weight and yet many people haven't got enough food. What a strange species we are. That balance between diet and I guess obesity and starvation is a horrible thing to consider, isn't it, in many ways? I mean, imagine 33 billion being spent on diets. It's outrageous. Now, let's look at the diets more closely. Is there a scientific basis to any of these diets? And this is a really important question, because if there's no science behind the diets, you shouldn't be on them. Let's start with that. And Johns Hopkins, that university, have done a massive study. They've studied 4,200 different diets that are reported and tried to figure out, are any of them any good? Now, I'm going to give you the punchline at the end as to which ones they recommend, because they have found one or two that seem to work. But the sobering truth is, very, very few diets work. Now, you will lose weight for a while. You know, you might lose weight for a month, but then it goes back on again, and that's no good. The whole goal of this is to maintain your weight as best you can. If you starve yourself, you'd obviously lose weight. That's not dieting, is it? Let's face it, it's just starvation. So the question is, can you modify your diet in some way, you know, to lose weight and get a more healthy weight? Now, what are these diets? Again, you'll have heard of them. One of the first stupid ones was the grapefruit diet. Guess what that said? Eat lots of grapefruit.
Grapefruit.
Now, if you only eat grapefruit, you're going to lose weight, obviously. You know, nothing special about grapefruit. But having a grapefruit-dominant diet in the 70s, many women would wake up in the morning and just eat a grapefruit and eat nothing else for the rest of the day, you see. They'd lose weight, of course they would, but then they'd go off the grapefruit and put the weight back on. It wasn't a great way to lose weight in the end. The second big one that kind of had prominence in the 70s was called the Scarsdale diet. Now, that recommended a certain amount of food to be taken in. Now, we measure food by calories. That's the unit we use to measure the amount of food we eat. And there's various recommendations as to how many calories you should eat a day. For a man, it's 2,500 calories. For a woman, it's 2,000. You'll see these on the food labels. But of course, it's very variable because it depends on how much exercise you take. So here's a good one. If you're a man and you eat 2,500 calories a day and you walk 6 kilometers a day, because exercise is important, that's a good thing to do. But how do you measure this? It's almost impossible. But the Scarsdale diet is 700 calories a day for 2 weeks. Then on off that diet, back on again, off again, off again, and you would lose weight. But as I say, you put the weight back on. The next one was the cabbage soup diet, which again was complete nonsense in a way, just drinking lots of soup made from cabbages. That was one that people tried. The Beverly Hills diet was a big one, and that was very popular. And that, of course, Beverly Hills, the name would convince you, wouldn't it? Everybody wants to be a Hollywood star, so go on that diet. That one involved eat one type of food for 10 days. And then a second type of food for the next 10 days. And then a third type. So maybe protein for 10 days, carbohydrate for 10 days. And again, you would lose weight. That became known as the liquid protein diet because you would mush the proteins up into a liquid and drink it. Oprah Winfrey famously lost a huge amount of weight on that diet and then put massive weight back on. And she then had advocated for that and then felt very bad about it. Said, oh, I shouldn't have really pressed that because this isn't ideal, is it? You know. And then, of course, the rebound can be worse. You can put on even more weight when you come off these. It's partly because you're miserable and you gorge and then you put on even more weight. So these diets can actually be counterproductive. The next one I love is the paleo diet. Now that is pretend like you're in the Stone Age and what did those people eat? That was stupid because we don't know what Stone Age people ate. But still, the paleo diet was common. Nuts and a bit of meat was kind of in that. The Mediterranean diet is the one that they eat in Mediterranean places. Again, that's a very popular diet. It's lots of olive oil, lots of legumes and pulses, a little glass of wine. And again, if you stick to that, you can lose weight. But then we have the famous French paradox. French people can be overweight and they haven't got heart disease, and they should be because of the risk of heart disease. Is there something in that diet then that's protecting the heart? It could be the olive oil, it could be something in the red wine, but still, the Mediterranean diet still persists in many ways. And then most recently, the Atkins diet. That's kind of a high protein diet, a bit like the liquid protein one I mentioned. And that has actually got a basis of sorts, because when you eat loads of protein, that tells your brain to stop eating. It's almost like as if we know we've had too much protein and then you eat less. So the high protein diet can repress your appetite and then you eat less. And then, of course, you're going to lose weight. But then, of course, you come off it and then the weight goes back on again. So again, not ideal. But again, you can lose weight by doing these various things. Now, get ready. I'm going to reveal the big reveal. What is the only diets that have scientific evidence? Now, what that would mean is they've been done properly. They've had a control group on the normal diet, and then they have the group that have taken the diet, and they compare the two over time and then look for evidence and try to have everything else the same, same exercise and stuff between them. 11 of the over 4,000 had some scientific evidence. Now, I'll say that again. That means out of 4,200 diets, only 11 had any scientific basis. It just shows you, right? And this is Johns Hopkins, very reputable place. And it ended up with two diets were proven to work. And they recommend these diets then. They tell GPs to advise their patients that these diets might work. And the first was Weight Watchers. Now, again, we're all very familiar with Weight Watchers. It's been around for quite a long time. You know, it was devised in the 70s originally. And again, there's good evidence. Now, what is Weight Watchers? Well, it turns out a big aspect there is social support. So you meet with a group of people, you discuss your diet with them, you have a bit of a laugh, actually, which helps tremendously, and you eat certain things as recommendations, mainly on the amount of food you eat, as opposed to what's in it. That seems to be a key thing about this. And there's various ways of running a Weight Watchers diet, but there's good evidence that if you join a Weight Watchers group, you will go on a certain diet or manage your intake of food carefully, and then you will lose weight and maintain that lower weight. So there's one. And then the second one is called the Jenny Craig diet, and that's in the US, and that's been shown to have beneficial effects. It's a bit similar. So it looks as if a lot of this is about social support.
You can do it!
Not shaming, not bullying, not making people feel bad. That's really a negative. It's more about support and watching what you eat, you know, and if you get the amount right, and it's okay to eat things you enjoy. You know, you shouldn't be just eating, you know, lots of grapefruits and you hate eating them. That's not going to work. That'll cause stress in various ways. So again, it's kind of about support and it's kind of about eating the right thing. Now, as I say, it's a serious topic because the projection is by 2030, one in two people in the Western world will be overweight or obese. Isn't that outrageous? How do we stop this happening? So we need to look at this very, very closely, give strong recommendations, of course, help people in various ways. Certainly, advertising certain foodstuffs to children is a big negative. They get hooked on certain types of food, then they put on more weight, and that the people are examining ways of advertising food that might help this process along. But the sad truth is, we don't know what to do. I mean, advice is one thing, of course, and support. There's no doubt genetics are part of it. If we can find certain genetic variants that are making you prone to becoming overweight and obese, we may be able to control those in some way or other. Of course, that's a bit controversial, but still, there's a big effort in the pharma industry to target some of these genes and help people who are putting on weight because they've got a particular variant in the gene. So it's a bit tricky, that. But the bottom line is actually relatively simple, if only we could follow it. If you eat less and exercise more, just keep that in your mind. You will perhaps get a weight that will be good for you and will make you healthy and decrease your risk of getting all these diseases. So remember, a little bit of what you fancy is okay. Take a bit of exercise and try not to overeat, seems to be the bottom line. Thank you very much. And you can join me every week on my podcast and tune in, and also with Pat Kenny on News Talk.